Praise of Lord Nityananda Balaram. Text 7. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai Jai
Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gobhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Advaita Chandra Jai Gobhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda.
Jai
Advaita Chandra Jai Gobhakta Vrinda. Sankarsana Karana Toyoshai Garbodashai Chapayobdishai Se Sastrayasyam Sakalasa Nitya Nandakya Rama Sharanam Mamastu Sankarsana Karana Toyasai Garbhodashai Chapayobdishai Se Sastayasyamsa Kalasanitya Nandakya Rama Sharanam Mamastu Sankarsana Karana Toyasai Garbhodashai Chapayobdishai Se Sastayasyamsa Kalasanitya Nandakya Rama Sharanam Mamastu Vaishnavis. Sankarsana, Mahasankarsan in the spiritual sky. Karanatoya Sai, Karnadakshai Vishnu, who lives in the causal ocean. Garbha Udakshai. Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who lives in the Garbhodaka ocean of the universe. Cha. And. Paya Abdishai. Shiro Dakashai Vishnu, who lives in the ocean of milk. Shesha. Sheshanag. The couch of Vishnu. Cha. And. Yasya, whose? Amsha, plenary portions. Kala, and parts of the plenary portions. Sa, he. Nityananda Akya, known as Lord Nityananda. Rama, Lord Balaram. Sharanam, shelter. Mama, my. Astu, let there be. Translation. May Sri Nityananda Rama be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarsana, Sheshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karna ocean, Garbha ocean, and the ocean of milk are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. Purport. Sri Sarup Damodar Goswami has recorded this verse in his diary to offer his respectful obeisances to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. This verse also appears as the seventh of the first 14 verses of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Om Agena Chimadandasya Akananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasavi Gobhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In this chapter, by the mercy of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and the notes that he memorized from Srila Sri Damodar Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, you are getting insight into the cosmic Nityananda and the transcosmic Nityananda. It seems that every religious sect, every religious group wants to have a cosmic god. So, ordinarily, you might consider this information to be rah-rah talk of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Just see how cosmic Nityananda Prabhu is. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives you such a comprehensive picture with the grandest cosmological and transcosmological schemes. And then he fills in all the details. You've never seen anything. Upon first encountering this information, any humble person will admit no mundane intelligence can make this up. It's too broad and limitless, and the details are too exquisite. The human imagination doesn't have that power. Of course, to get around the impact of all this transcendental information, mundane scholars like to credit it all to the might of the Hindu imagination. Those Hindus, they can't get much together, but when it comes to imagination, they are number one. That's how the Indologists approach all this. And we have something to learn from how they exercise their imaginative prowess. They say, the Westerners, we live in too much of a factual world. We live too much in the real world. We need the Hindus for expanding our creative horizons, letting the creative juices flow. So we offer all obeisances to Hindu mythology. Now, just think, you are educated persons. Many of you doctors, IT wallahs, and just look what you're sitting down and listening to. Just hear the details of the transcendental reality. Mahasankarshan in the spiritual sky, Karunadakshay Vishnu, who lies in the causal ocean and breathes out universes from his pores, and then glances, and by his glance he impregnates limitless living entities. And then Garbhadakshay Vishnu, whose perspiration fills the bottom half of the universe, and then a lotus flower sprouts from his navel. And the smartest person in the universe comes from where? Not IIT, but from the navel. From the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And then what's next? Kshirodakshay Vishnu, the ocean of milk. And then Sheshanag, the couch of Vishnu. Sheshanag has so many heads, you can't count them. And he's the couch of Vishnu. Just think of all this information that you are calmly accepting. Indeed, that is proof of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. That you would dare to consider this. Of course, when we look at the fantasies of mundane scientists, we're forced to have complete faith in matter. That matter can do inconceivable things. Matter is endowed with inconceivable shakti. So much so that matter can produce life, consciousness, and all the variegatedness of the universe. Should we put our trust, or at least our initial hunch, in matter, or should we put it in Mahasankarshan, the three Purushavatars, Sheshanag, and what to speak of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya? So this is the battle that you fight in your mind. Is this information simply cultural conditioning? Is there a way to verify this information? Now, why, first of all, is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explaining all this? He wants you to actually understand what is beyond the universe and also how this universe came about. Just because this information is beyond the range of our material senses doesn't mean automatically that it is not true. We must admit how helpless we are, and that's a tough thing for those educated in today's educational systems. You are trained to have confidence in your own faculties. Don't depend on anyone, except when it's time to get a job. You are independent, except for most of the waking hours of your week. When you are dependent on the whims of your employer. But in any case, this is how persons today are trained. You stand upon your own feet. That means you speculate your way. As a human being, you are entitled to speculate. And your truth is as good as anyone else's truth. Why should one truth be better than another truth? So this is the culture that people are going up in today. Conclusive truth is considered to be impossible to have. As you know, if you've spent any time doing outreach in the Western world, often you run across persons who say, no one knows, no one knows, just no one knows what's going on. So I always thank them for that knowledge. No one knows, really. You seem to know something. You seem to know that no one knows. And of course, you know, that causes a thinking person to hesitate. Wait a minute. How do I know that no one knows? So it all sounds so lucid and clear to you because you have the mercy of Lord Nityananda. But otherwise, the ordinary person would be totally baffled. Isn't it true that no one knows? In fact, they're hoping no one knows. Because as long as no one knows, you can just do whatever you want at every moment. The last thing they want is that someone knows. Because then you're obligated and you're dependent. So what Krishna's Kaivraja Goswami does in Chaitanya Charitamrita, before moving to the Leelas, he gives you all the information to convince you that you are dependent and you should joyfully recognize your dependency. He's going to explain how even Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, they're dependent on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They are proud to be known as servants of Lord Chaitanya. They jump up suddenly in ecstasy and dance, crying out, I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am the servant of his servant. That is dependency. They are Prabhus. They are Vishnu Tattva. Yet, they publicly declare their dependency on Mahaprabhu. When you hear all this information in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, you are indeed humbled. First, Kaviraj Goswami wants you to understand that Lord Chaitanya is no ordinary person. Not even is he an ordinary avatar. So Kaviraj Goswami takes much time to convince you that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is avatari, the source of all avatars. Sarva avatari. Then you might wonder, oh, who is Nityananda? It is a fact that people have a harder time understanding Nityananda than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because of Nityananda's avaduta behavior, in which he takes no heed of social formulas. He takes no heed of Vedic protocols. He just does whatever he likes. Whereas Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to uphold proper external dharma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very determined to rigidly display the activities and behaviors of the sannyasa ashram. So there's always this tug of war going on between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, including Nityananda Prabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to follow sannyas dharma very strictly to set an example, and his associates don't want him to do it. They don't want to see him take up austerities. They don't want to see him deprive himself in any way, shape, or form. So there's this constant tug of war going on. And sometimes it can seem that Lord Chaitanya is angry at his associates, even at Nityananda Prabhu. But underneath Lord Chaitanya's external anger at his associates, and even at Nityananda Prabhu, is, of course, the greatest affection. So Nityananda Prabhu just specializes in disregarding any ordinary norms of behavior. So therefore, if you thought people have a hard time understanding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's even more difficult to understand Nityananda Prabhu. Yet, Nityananda Prabhu's mercy is what allows one to get the attention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is indeed inconceivable how Nityananda Prabhu acts so oblivious to social formulas, yet his mercy is so extraordinarily inconceivable. So this is what Kaviraj Goswami, this is the mission that Kaviraj Goswami is taking to heart. He's going to convince you to think twice about Nityananda Prabhu. And he knows, based on the example of his own brother, what happens when you underestimate Lord Nityananda. If you underestimate Lord Nityananda, of course, you have no access to Mahaprabhu. So therefore, you're getting this whole cosmological and transcosmological presentation of Lord Nityananda Balaram. Because then you'll be able to properly and fully approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami explains that by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, he was able to go to Vrindavan. Indeed, then you can understand the whole writing of Chaitanya Charitamrita is because of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. It was Nityananda Prabhu who sent Kaviraj Goswami to Vrindavan in a dream, saying, go to Vrindavan, there everything will be possible. Don't be afraid. How did Kaviraj Goswami capture the attention of Nityananda Prabhu? On the one hand, of course, you could say, and it's true, that Kaviraj Goswami is eternally the brave soul. But in his biography, his autobiography, he's presenting other dynamics that he wants you to focus upon. He captured the attention of Nityananda Prabhu because he defended Nityananda Prabhu to his brother. His brother didn't think much of Nityananda Prabhu. Although his brother thought highly of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You all know how this came out into the open. The great devotee of Nityananda Prabhu, Miniketana Ramdas, approached where Kaviraj Goswami was residing. And you know how everyone immediately bowed down, knowing that this is the servant of Nityananda Prabhu. So they gave him all respect, recognizing that he was so dear to the master, Nityananda Prabhu. Everyone bowed down, everyone showed respect, except the pujari, who thought, I'm doing puja. I don't have to bow down. I don't have to acknowledge the entrance of Miniketana Ramdas. And of course, Miniketana Ramdas was not known for his ordinary behavior. He was absorbed in the mood of a cowherd boy, associate of Nityananda Prabhu. He would slap people with his flute. He would climb up on their backs. He would do behavior like that. So obviously, someone with mundane intelligence would think faulty of this devotee. Why does he behave like that? This is not being properly religious. In that way, of course, an ignorant observer would not be able to recognize what is the goal of religion, pure love of God. And that's what Miniketana Ramdas emanated. He was the walking goal of Dharma. So then, Miniketana Ramdas reacted to the pujaris not showing respect. Now you might think, well, wait a minute, is that Vaishnava life? Just because the pujari didn't respect him, he has to become angry, even break his flute and go away? Well, isn't this some kind of prestige thing, respect thing? But we have to understand Miniketana Ramdas' pure devotion. He did not take the slight for him. He took it as a slight for his master, Nityananda Prabhu. He's showing how to be a fully developed Vaishnava. All the emotions are there, but they're in perfection. Even pride is there on the perfect spiritual platform. You're not proud of your own abilities. You're not proud of anything you did, but you're proud of your master. So that was Miniketana Ramdas. He's not slighting me. He is slighting Nityananda Prabhu with his all-knowing vision. When a Vaishnava is all-knowing, that means he knows whatever Krishna wants him to know. The part and parcel is never omniscient, like the complete whole. But the part and parcel, in perfection, knows whatever the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants the devotee to know. So Minikethan Ram Dass knew this Pujari actually has got a problem with Nityananda. So you have to understand it. Otherwise, you'd think, well, what's the fuss, you know? All right, so he's doing puja. He didn't bow down to you. It happens, you know? If such an incident happened here, you would not expect, you know, a brahmachari to get angry, break his flute, and leave the ashram. Now the senior brahmacharis would, you know, tell him, calm down, calm down. This is not the behavior at Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir. So then why Minikethan Ram Dass? Why did he do like that? As I said, he knew there's a big problem here. And he wanted to dramatize that big problem for the sake of everyone. So actually, this is Minikethan Ram Dass's mercy. A so-called eccentric dramatic explosion is actually his mercy. You got a problem here, Prabhus. Recognize it. Deal with it. And I'm out of here. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami took that very seriously. He didn't take it that Minikethan Ram Dass was just, you know, having some unconventional behavior and just excuse him, he's a great soul. You know, I don't know why he's doing that. And a devotee thinks very seriously about what extraordinary personalities do. We see that even with Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes devotees don't go that extra mile to try and understand why he acted in a certain way. And as the years go by since Prabhupada's disappearance, sometimes misunderstandings creep in. Why did he do this? Why did he say that? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I could go along with that. I don't know if I can understand that. Since we're at Radha Gopinath Mandir in such a transcendentally ecstatic place, I will tell you my own little tiny story, as long as you promise to consider it very tiny and very insignificant. Everyone promises. Okay. Oh, about 12 years ago. Now, this is on my own personal realization. But Kaviraj Goswami has his personal realizations documented in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, ordinarily, I shouldn't speak about this, but just to reveal the mercy of Nityananda, I'm going to say it. So, what I will explain, of course, is just a drop in the ocean. But it illustrates that point, that sometimes devotees have problems understanding extraordinary personalities, and instead of making that step to go the extra mile, well, I don't understand, perhaps it could be I require more realization, perhaps I need guidance. Instead of thinking like that, they immediately make a snap judgment, because in today's culture, snap judgments are very valued. Those are the kind of executives that are wanted. How quickly can you size up a situation? Just like those multiple choice questions for IIT. How quickly? Did you get it all right? So we apply that to the transcendental realm. Snap judgments. I've got it all figured out. It's got it. It's either A, B, C, D. Okay, I've got 10 seconds. C. Right? So, about 10 years ago, there was some discussion amongst devotees that about Prabhupada's statements about certain things. And I'm not going to say what it was because it's actually not the point. Why did he say that? Perhaps it was because of his Victorian background growing up in Calcutta. His ethnicity influenced him to say such things in the Bhagavatam purports, so on and so forth. He shouldn't have said that. And someone should have explained to him. So things were getting a bit intense. So my little tiny self, I wrote an essay explaining how you cannot with your material intellect, try to dissect someone who is on the platform of ecstatic love of Krishna. Of course, this is the point Chaitanya Charitamrita makes. You can't apply your mundane reasoning to someone who is drowning in the flood of Krishna Prem. So if you admit that there's such a thing as Krishna Prem, the ocean of love of God, then you also have to understand that such a person sees differently. Such a person behaves differently, and it doesn't always coincide with mundane existence. So I was explaining like that and quoting from Shastra. And, oh, I was just jumped on. What are you talking about? This is not relevant. These are the same old excuses that we've been getting again and again and again. Let's deal with the issue. Let's deal with Prabhupada's problems. So I got totally nuked. dragged through the coals. And it was not a very pleasant ordeal. So I thought, well, anyway, what could I do? I tried, I failed. So that a few weeks later, I had a stunning dream of Srila Prabhupada. I was waiting outside his room, and I was saying to myself over and over again, I failed to defend Prabhupada. I failed to defend my spiritual master. My life is useless. Meanwhile, Prabhupada was beckoning. Come to my room. I said, no, I can't come. I failed. I did not defend you properly. So then, Prabhupada came out of his room and picked me off the floor, embraced me tight, and said, thank you for defending me. So, I'm saying this tiny example of a tiny, less than a particle of the reality of the Bhakti Ocean, just to cast some light upon what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami did in his extraordinary way and how he got the extraordinary result. He actually had an argument with his brother. Now, you know, even today in India, although things are changing so rapidly, family arguments, they're not supposed to happen, although they do, and you're supposed to smooth it out very quickly for the sake of family progress and keeping up the status quo. So for Kaviraj Goswami to bring this point up to his brother, obviously it was not an ordinary thing, because it attracted such a reaction from Nityananda Prabhu. Kaviraj Goswami explained, I know that you have strong faith in Chaitanya, but you have neglected Nityananda. It's better you be an atheist and reject both of them than try to play one off against the other. It's a very strong statement. Better you become an atheist and reject both of them to accept one and not accept the other. These two brothers, they're one. Just as Krishna and Balaram are one in the sense that the only real difference is Krishna is bluish, Balaram is whitish, Krishna generally wears yellow, Balaram wears blue. That's how close they are. And it's the same with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. So Kaviraj Goswami made this strong point. His brother did not accept. And just briefly, Kaviraj Goswami points out, his spiritual life ebbed away. He fell down. He tried to save his brother, in other words, but he failed. So he had a most vivid dream of Nityananda Prabhu. And he gives you the full description, which you all know in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The stunning appearance of Lord Nityananda Balaram, surrounded by his Cowherd Associates. You get verse-by-verse detail of how Lord Nityananda Balaram looked, what was happening around him. And he said to Kaviraj Goswami, don't be afraid. In other words, I know this is really blowing your mind, but don't be afraid. Arise, go to Vrindavan. There everything will be possible. Your good fortune will await you in Vrindavan. So when Kaviraj Goswami awoke, he practically, when the full impact hit him as he awoke, he collapsed on the ground. And without a moment's delay, he left for Vrindavan. So what happened when he got to Vrindavan? Understand that first of all, he has attained Vrindavan by the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Under Nityananda Prabhu's authorization, Kaviraj Goswami went to Vrindavan. And what happened there? All the further events that happened in Vrindavan, Kaviraj Goswami attributes to the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Number one, he got the shelter of Sanatan Goswami, who is the epitome of Bhakti Siddhanta, the Bhakti conclusions. He got the shelter of Rupa Goswami, who is the Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of knowledge of the nectarian loving relationships with Krishna. He got the shelter, he said, of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he also got the shelter of Srup Damodar. So all those inconceivable personalities became his shelter. And Kaviraj Goswami says it's because of Nityananda Prabhu. Not only these extraordinary personalities, but the Vaishnavs in Vrindavan in general. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, they gave me their mercy because of Nityananda Prabhu. And then he goes further. He says, the darshan and blessings of Radha Madan Mohan Vigraha, that's because of Nityananda Prabhu. The darshan, the grace of Shishi Radha Govinda, that is because of Nityananda Prabhu. So in this way, Kaviraj Goswami presents everything, all the good fortune that happened to him in Vrindavan, even his very going to Vrindavan, as the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. And of course, by being in Vrindavan and getting the mercy of those deities and Vaishnavas, Kaviraj Goswami wrote Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in that way, Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is considered by Vaishnavacharyas to be the pinnacle of Vaishnava literature, you know, sweet, sweeter, sweetest, it's all absolute, but Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered the most exquisite spiritual rendition. This is all the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. Now, let's point out one thing. You might think that Kaviraj Goswami, the recipient of such extraordinary mercy, is obviously thankful and grateful, but along with his inconceivable presentation of the mercy he got, are inconceivable self-depictions. He presents himself in such a humiliating way. In other words, Kaviraj Goswami is showing you the whole spectrum of pure Vaishnava emotions and pure Vaishnava knowledge, which doesn't exclude his powerful statements of his analysis of his own worth. So you might wonder, how does all that fit in? On the one hand, he's talking about such inconceivable things. And he got such inconceivable mercy. On the other hand, what does he say about himself? I'm more sinful than Jagai Madai. I'm lower than a worm in stool. anyone who sees me or hears my name loses all their pious activities. You might say, well, very nice poetry. Yes, this is part of the Vaishnava culture to say like that, even though you don't really think that way, of course. As modern psychologists will tell you, you shouldn't have a problem with self-esteem. You should be able to appreciate your own self-worth. That's very necessary in the working world. How full of yourself are you? How can you present yourself as all-knowing? If you don't know it today, you'll find out overnight as you stay up all night doing research on the internet. You're supposed to present yourself as savvy in that way. To deprecate yourself, to lower yourself so dramatically as Kaviraj Goswami did, is considered psychologically unhealthy. By the standards of the contemporary world. Yet, you see, Kaviraj Goswami speaks so... He demotes himself so much. Yet, at the same time, he's presenting such inconceivable spiritual truths. So he's giving you insight into the whole spectrum of Vaishnava emotions. He's showing you, don't think that by becoming Krishna's servant, your personality becomes constricted and distorted and very cramped. I find that devotees, sometimes they have this subconscious fear that if I become too advanced in bhakti, I'll lose touch with myself and I don't know what the opportunities for full emotional expression will be. Therefore, I should cling to some material attachments. After all, we don't want to lose our connection to humanity. And so that means, that fear of losing connection to humanity means I should hold on to mundane characteristics of myself. Because who knows whether on the spiritual platform there will be full opportunity for me to be myself. Whatever that is. I don't know that. This is why we say, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatadesha Tarani. What's plaguing us in the background is Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, impersonalism and voidism. What would I be like if I did want to be a pure devotee? What would it be like? I don't know. This is what's going on subconsciously. Therefore, better to hold on to the mundane platform. To some degree, in a nice way, of course, in a Vaishnava-like way. But when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see this inconceivable panorama. Such ecstatic love of Krishna, such extraordinary knowledge of the spiritual material world, and yet such an utter presentation of humility. It's so... Such a low presentation of self-esteem that Prabhupada even had to explain to us. Don't think Kaviraj Goswami is just being poetic when he says these things. He's actually 100% feeling it to his core. That takes a lot of thought. Naturally, we're all thinking and fearing that if ever we wrote such a text as Chaitanya Charitamrita, or even something remotely near it, we would feel a sense of accomplishment. Yeah, it's pretty good what I did. Of course, it's all Krishna's mercy, we know that. Yeah, I did pretty good. By Krishna's grace, I've got good abilities. I've done a lot, actually. Have you noticed, Prabhus? But to say something like, I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madai and mean it? I'm low in the worm and stool and mean it? When you think about it, after making such an extraordinary literature, this is very... It's very inconceivable for us. But through the humility and erudition of Kaviraj Goswami, we are seeing Vaishnav emotions in perfection. And that is why Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of the reasons why it is such an ocean of nectar, because you get to see the characteristics of the spirit soul in perfection through activities. Indeed, that is what Chaitanya Charitamrita literally means. The activities of the living force, the characteristics of the living force in perfection. So when you read about the interactions between the devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you actually see what it's like to behave on the spiritual platform. And suddenly, the whole world of mundane emotions seems so trivial and perverted. So by the mercy of Kaviraj Goswami, you can get a clear vision of what the lifestyle on the perfect sentient platform is like. This is what Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda do with their leelas. Krishna has his leelas, but Lord Chaitanya shows how to live with devotees in perfection. How to relate to devotees in perfection. That is the great contribution of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. How to hear and chant in perfection together with devotees. How to take prasad in perfection. How to dance in perfection. In this way, as the perfect devotee, Lord Chaitanya dispels our paranoia that if we relinquish our grip on the material world, who knows what life will be like. We think, okay, if I join Krishna Leela, I understand what that's going to be. But what about as a devotee makes advancement, what lies ahead? So Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and their associates show you the perfection of Vaishnava Sangha. In this way, we have a goal to strive for. By the activities of the devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see the standard. You know how high the bar is. You know how much progress you have to make. So let us return to our discussion of the problem with Nityananda Prabhu. Kaviraj Goswami's brother had that problem. Therefore, to educate people in who is actually Lord Nityananda, you see this elaborate presentation. Once you can understand how Balaram interacts with Krishna, then you can also understand how Nityananda Prabhu reacts with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, interacts with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How did Lord Balaram act toward Krishna? As his servant, as his guru, and as his friend. Nityananda Prabhu does the same thing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, while Krishna was in the forest with his friends, sometimes Balaram would rest his head on the lap of a cowherd boy and Krishna would come along and massage his feet. Taking a subordinate role. And of course, in their sporting pastimes in the forest, they were friends, Krishna and Balaram. And Balaram would also present himself as the servant of Krishna. Sometimes Krishna would massage his feet as Balaram being the master, the guru. Sometimes Balaram would acknowledge Krishna is the master. It's like in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, when Balaram saw the whole bewilderment of Lord Brahma unfolding and how the calves and cows were more attached to each other, how the sons were more attached to their mothers and fathers, Balaram was getting suspicious. What's going on here? And then he began to reflect upon himself. He did an internal scan. What I'm seeing is very bewildering. Now, could it be that some Rakshasi, some witch, is showing her mystic power? But when he did an internal scan, he understood. No. After all, who am I? I'm Balaram. No Rakshasi could bewilder me. So there's only one possibility. My brother. I'm his servant, and he's doing these things. So then Balaram privately consulted with Krishna. Krishna, what's going on? I know you're the boss. What's happening? And Krishna told him. And Balaram understood, okay. So in this way, Balaram sometimes acted as Krishna's servant, sometimes as Krishna's friend, sometimes as Krishna's guru. Nityananda Prabhu does the same thing. So Kaviraj Goswami wants to establish Lord Nityananda Balaram. And he presents to you the whole package so that you would never consider Balaram separate from Nityananda and Nityananda separate from Balaram. And he presents that whole package in such a way that you can see what Lord Nityananda is doing with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Kaviraj Goswami traces the whole expansion of the material world to Nityananda Prabhu as Balaram. Therefore, you get today's verse. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarshan, Sheshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karan Ocean, Garbhadak Ocean, and Ocean of Milk are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. Kaviraj Goswami is giving you the whole theology, scientific theology of Nityananda in the cosmic sense and beyond this cosmos. And then he's going to explain to you that that same Nityananda, who is the origin of all these plenary portions and portions of plenary portions, he is distributing Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and you cannot effectively please Lord Chaitanya without pleasing Lord Nityananda. And to prove that, Kaviraj Goswami presents his own example. He's saying, look what happened to me. Because of Nityananda Prabhu's blessings, I was able to go to Vrindavan. I was able to get the mercy of the Vaishnavas. I was able to get the mercy of Srupa Damodar, Rupa and Snatan, Raghunath Das Goswamis. And I was able to get the mercy of Sri Sri Radha Madan Mahan and Sri Sri Radha Govinda. So in this way, right from the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are trained to take Lord Nityananda with utmost seriousness. And that training is so necessary. We've spoken before about how mundane scholars have a tough time with Lord Chaitanya. They say he was a great social reformer. He was fighting for equality. He was trying to diminish the caste system. And then he got to Puri. And what happened? He just lost the plot completely. He was doing so good. Civil rights, class equality, all those highest human goals. Then he got to Puri and he just dropped the ball. Well, the British historians especially, they say like that. They just write him off. They just miss him after Lord Chaitanya, you know, entered his last 12 years in Puri. No point in even historians keeping track of him. So, if they have that problem with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Nityananda Avaduta, even Advaitacharya, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they would sometimes be exasperated with Nityananda Prabhu. Of course, exasperated in pure ecstatic love that they were all drowning in. We'll speak more about that tonight. Nityananda Prabhu could be very bewildering. So my point is showing you that you could have it's possible to have a real bias against Nityananda Prabhu, even subconsciously. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, okay, I can swallow that. But when you hear about things Nityananda Prabhu is doing, it's more difficult. Yet, our getting the full mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dependent on our understanding Nityananda Prabhu. So today, we beg Lord Nityananda for the ability to get his mercy. You see, Narottam Das Thakur explains, if you want to understand Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, you have to take shelter of the literature of the Goswamis. But in order to take shelter of the literature of the Goswamis, you have to first get the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. So all roads lead through Nityananda Prabhu. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes this point. If you want the full mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, you have to understand Nityananda Prabhu. And we'll discuss tonight how Nityananda Prabhu, besides dealing with Jagai and Madai, being more merciful in that event, in general, he is more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya dealt with very high-class devotees, the greatest scholars in India, very upper-class persons who became his devotees. But by his direction, Nityananda Prabhu just distributed Lord Chaitanya's mercy with no consideration. That is the advantage of being an avaduta. Nityananda Prabhu can deliver who he likes. He can uplift whoever he likes. So by him giving Nityananda Prabhu the task of spreading bhakti without consideration, Lord Chaitanya knew exactly what he was doing. Not simply because Nityananda is his closest associate, Balaram, but because who can question Nityananda? Indeed, even if you question him, you can't stop him. You may say, what is this Nitai? What is he doing? Well, you can't stop him. He doesn't care. In this way, Mahaprabhu knows exactly the way to do things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere without consideration. Who's the best person to call on to do that? Someone who doesn't care about any considerations. Nityananda does what he likes. So he was the right man to hire, so to speak. So this is all explained by Kaviraj Goswami in the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita. At first, you may think all this information right in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita is a bit intense. Oh, that Adi Leela is a bit difficult to get through. When are we going to get to the nectar parts? Right? These first 7 or 8 chapters,
kind of intense. But that information that Kaveri Goswami gives is extraordinarily necessary for appreciating the Leelas. Hmm. Armed with the understandings of these first chapters of Adi Leela, then your appreciation of the Leelas exponentially increases. Everyone likes to get mercy. But how vast is that mercy? And what is the science of mercy? This is the day for approaching that ocean of the science of mercy. And that mercy is distributed by the most unconventional personality. Nityananda, who never took sannyas, therefore another name is, he has his Nityananda Sroop, that's his brahmachari name. He's the pinnacle of the lifelong brahmachari. In his own way, as a Paramahansa Vedanta. Of course, he had unconventional activities. Yet, at the same time, you could always see that he was far beyond any material constraints, any material understandings. So Kaviraj Goswami asks you that you simply try to analyze the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. You'll never find a greater subject matter for your intelligence than trying to understand that. How it is that an avaduta who seemingly disregards the classic Varnashram Dharma yet is known as Nityananda Sroop. He kept his brahmachari name. How is that possible? How could he do all the things he did and yet remain 100% untouched by the material energy and enable his followers to be 100% untouched by the material energy? This is why a solid foundation in understanding Lord Nityananda is so essential. And we're so grateful that Kaviraj Goswami has so rigorously and comprehensively presented us with this tattva. Equipped with the tattva, with Nityananda tattva, we can then proceed into the Leelas. Are there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for your association. Maharaj, you were mentioning in the class about how Kaviraj Goswami defended Lord Nityananda, Miniketan Ramdas, and he chastised his brother. And then also you mentioned your own story, how you tried to serve Srila Prabhupada. You mentioned your own story of how you tried to serve Srila Prabhupada. So I was thinking at that time that Nityananda Prabhu is the Adi Guru, and the Guru Tattva, Nityananda Prabhu is representing the Guru Tattva also. So when we are serving our spiritual master in different situations, a peculiar kind of situation arises, because when we are new, we hear that you please Krishna by serving Guru and you serve Guru by following his instructions. And then we see that in an institutional setup like ISKCON, Guru may have many disciples, and all disciples may not get direct instructions, services from the spiritual master. And then they understand that, okay, we serve the spiritual master by serving his representatives, like that. But as devotees grow senior or they grow older, they discover their own unique natures and their inspiration, or they have different choices of service. So at such times, without access to the spiritual master, how can many devotees know that they are pleasing their guru and they are getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda? And how can they know that they are, you know, what they are doing is in parampara, and how can they feel that connection?
You say they're becoming more mature. You say they're becoming more advanced. Then they know that vani is even more important than vapu. You may have the physical presence, you may not. But the vani is more powerful and actually more intimate. So this is the name of the game as you become a mature devotee. Of course, you should take all the physical association that you're lucky enough to get. At the same time, you know that the most powerful, dynamic, and intimate association is through the vani. Now, one more thing. About this point, I recall an answer given by His Holiness Gaura Govinda Maharaj, which made me think a lot. He said that sometimes it's presented to him that Prabhupada had thousands of disciples, so how could you actually ever get any direct instruction or get some understanding of your service? And it was his answer I had to think about for a long time. He said, somehow or other, if you're really desperate, if you're really possessed by this desire to serve, you find some way to fall at his feet and beg. I said, wait a minute. But now, thousands of disciples, I saw that his answer was beyond the material practicalities. He says, somehow or other, you fall at his feet and beg for service. Somehow or other. Where there's a will, there's a way. So his answer was not that, consider the practicalities, how will you ever get a chance to do that? He didn't get into all that. He just said, somehow or other, be desperate, fall at the feet as a beggar. And by that desperate attitude, things will happen. That was his point. He didn't say that you had to be acknowledged according to your vision. He just said, no, desperately become a beggar, fall at his feet. It'll happen. How it will happen, you may not materially understand. So in this way, bhakti it doesn't always fit into our technological analyses. So I can see now, after thinking about it a long time, that His Holiness Gaura Govinda Maharaj was stressing, all right, from the material point of view, you're saying Prabhupada had thousands of disciples, how would everyone be able to approach and please, how can I serve you? But he said, never mind all that. What is your attitude? If you're desperate, you fall at his feet. Somehow or other, you beg for service. It doesn't mean that you have to be recognized. Oh, I see you. He didn't get into it. He said, you just do your part. Things will happen. That is bhakti. So I had to think about it because it's different from other answers that I heard. Other answers would say, things are the way they are, and... You got to be practical. He didn't say be practical. He said be desperate. Be a beggar. Beg for service. Somehow to throw yourself at his feet. He didn't describe the practical situation in which that had to happen, that you and the guru had to be alone and then you fall at his feet and you get all his attention. He just said, fall at his feet, beg for his service. And from my tiny realization, I would say that if you have that attitude, something will happen. I think that was his point. Bhakti is not material. It's not constrained by material circumstances. Something will happen. It can seem to be a very small thing to other persons, but for you, it can be your whole life. Just like when you hear about Prabhupada memories from his disciples, you hear amazing things that just a smile, just a little something, just made the whole devotee's life. You hear about devotees who've never met Prabhupada. Maybe they were in Brazil or something. His disciples were in Brazil. He never went to Brazil. But they have these strong connections through the Vani. You hear about grand disciples having such vivid dreams of Prabhupada. Dreams of the spiritual master are not ordinary. The real standard, of course, is the Shastra. Nevertheless, dreams of the spiritual master are not ordinary. So, I can see now what His Holiness Guru Govinda Maharaj meant. I had to think about it because it wasn't the answer that normally you hear. Just, you know, the guru has his representatives. You please the representatives, the guru is pleased. That's true. Serve in separation. That's true. But he went around all that and said, just how desperate are you really? You should think that you're complacent and you should think you're lazy. What do you mean? I'm hungry for service. You know, I just don't have a chance, you know, to be around the guru and express that. I want to do anything to please him. He said, I can see that Maharaj totally reversed the tables. So to speak. You should think you're complacent and lazy, and therefore it hasn't become clear to you how you could serve. So if you're actually desperate, you'll just fall at his feet and somehow or other communicate this. So I had to think about it, as I said, for a long time. What about the practicalities? You know, thousands of disciples, you know, how much time is there in the day? Logistics. But he just, he just paid no attention to all that in his answer. And then accused you of being lazy and complacent. So I thought, okay, I'll take that advice. I'll fall down in front of Prabhupada's Vyasasana and say, I'm lazy, I'm complacent. How can I serve you? I know the story of my godbrother, Haridas. I think he's from Mumbai. He told me this when I was a young devotee, 1975, and I was always concerned. I've got to get Prabhupada's association. How am I going to maneuver past all the leaders and get Prabhupada's association? So, he came to L.A., Haridas, and he told the story of how when he was in India, he was always doing like that. In terms of wherever Prabhupada was in India, Haridas said he would drop his service and go racing off to see Prabhupada. Just jump on the train. Prabhupada, I'm here. And he was expert in maneuvering past all Prabhupada's secretaries and guards. He had it down to an art. How to slip past Tamal Krishna Maharaj, how to slip past Shrutakirti, and suddenly emerge in Prabhupada's room. Because Prabhupada had very few Indian disciples then, so Prabhupada was actually not simply their guru, he was like their father too. There was an ocean of Western devotees, and there were very few Indian devotees, so Prabhupada took special care of them. Subhagmar told me at the Bury Place temple in London, the first temple, he was there, and of course he's from Calcutta. So someone told Prabhupada, you know, it's all, you know, Western devotees, British devotees, someone told Prabhupada, yeah. Is a devotee from Calcutta. The Prabhupada waited till everyone left. And he called out to Subhag, hey, come here, come here, come here. And the Prabhupada disciple who recently departed, Shamlal, he's from Navadvip. He ran away from home and joined Prabhupada when he was like 17. And it might sound a little strong to you, but when Shamlal's father passed away and the family was saying, come, 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 you must come back, attend the funeral, Prabhupada told him, no, no. Obviously, Prabhupada understood that, you know, he goes back, they'll never let him go. You know, so Prabhupada very much wanted them to have someone from Navadvip join him. So he just told Shyamalal. Shyamalal was like 17 or 18 when he ran off to be with Prabhupada. No, no, you stay with me, I'll take care of you. And so even all these decades of separation from Prabhupada, when Shyamalal was leaving his body, he had brain cancer and he couldn't remember very much. He forgot all about Maya. By Krishna's mercy, he didn't remember any of Maya, and all he could do was remember, Prabhupada said he would take care of me. Prabhupada said he would take care of me. And he left this world just saying like that. Prabhupada said he would take care of me. That's the only thing his brain could cognate. Prabhupada said he would take care of me. What a destiny. What a fate. The mechanism, his biological mechanism, the brain, that's all the brain could process. Prabhupada said he would take care of me. So, Haridas was always treating Prabhupada in that affectionate way. All these Western devotees, you know, I can't really completely relate to them, but Prabhupada, he's my father. He's the father of all the Indian devotees. He'll take care of me. So he would drop his service and run off to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would tolerate for a while. Prabhupada would go to, Calcutta or Allahabad, and there would be Haridas. drops his puja, drops, all his deity service, whatever, and just races off across India to be with Prabhupada. So finally, Prabhupada was in Mumbai. Haridas told me this. And Haridas knew it. He left whatever city he was at, got on the train, and he got to Mumbai. And he had to strategize how to get in Prabhupada's room because Tamal Krishnamurti was guarding the door. So he made a whole military tactical plan. And in the right moment, slipped into the room, paid his dandavats, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I'm here. No one does like that here, right? No. But you can understand his emotional dynamics. And Prabhupada understood his emotional dynamics. And Prabhupada felt responsible for him. So, when Haridas got off the floor, Prabhupada began to lecture him. Haridas, do you think I am this body? Don't you know that you can go to any of my temples all over the world, approach the Vyasa Sun, I am there. Sorry, that's told me. He said he never forgot that. And then when he told me that, I also, oh, so that is the way it works. So you can have that desperate attitude. Please, you must give me some service. But that attitude is not dependent on material circumstances or material arrangements. So His Holiness Gaura Govinda Maharaj was stressing the attitude, and that you consider yourself as lazy and complacent. Not that you say, the guru, I don't know if he's going to be able to take care of all these disciples, and I don't know how this is going to work out, I don't get any answers to my letters. I have to deal with all his assistants, who are all great souls, of course, but so no, you put the burden on you. I am lazy. I am complacent. Therefore, I have not received some specific service instruction. So I began. I said, I will take this attitude on myself. What makes me think that I have received all the instruction that I want? And what's the reason if I think I haven't? I must be lazy. I must be complacent. So let me crash down before Prabhupada's Vyasa San and say, I am lazy. I am complacent. How can I serve you? So it took me a while to understand. His Holiness Guru Govinda Maharaj's answer. He wasn't taking practicalities as an answer. He was actually giving the real practicality. And if you have that real practical attitude, something will happen. Because this is a spiritual relationship between guru and disciple. Institution is there, yes. But still that spiritual dynamic between the spiritual master and disciple is there. And it's especially so if the disciple follows in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and says, I'm a fool. Guru More Mukhateki Karidoshasan. My spiritual master considered me a fool and just told me to chant Hare Krishna. And I did, and look what happened. That's Mahaprabhu. So, it's a very common point that you've raised. And sometimes devotees don't want to say it because, you know, they want to express that maybe they feel shortchanged or maybe they feel deprived. All the other devotees, or not all the other devotees, but the lucky few who surround the guru, and how do I break into that topmost ensemble, the first rank. That's material analysis, the first rank. How do I break in there? And I felt like that in the 70s. But then, based on what His Holiness Guru Govinda Maharaj said, I could see that there was an attitude change. Well, there had to be an attitude change after Prabhupada's departure. There had to be. Because no longer was there a material opportunity that forced us, his disciples, to look for the spiritual opportunity. So, I would say the same thing applies to devotees whose spiritual masters are still physically present, but you may feel that you don't get all the attention you want. Go for the spiritual opportunity and see what happens. Have that attitude. It's on me because I'm lazy, I'm complacent, therefore the particular instruction that I'd like to get about how to serve, it hasn't come through. So I'll be desperate for it. I'll be... Even you just offer your obeisances to your spiritual master, and as you offer your obeisances, you beg, please, how can I serve you? That's bhakti. It's not a ritual. If you have that attitude, I'm begging for service as you offer obeisances, you'll see that super soul in your heart arranges things. So don't make material calculation. Logistically, it's not possible. The main thing is your attitude and your approach to bhakti. And then you'll gain confidence how indeed Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual master is his representative. So don't place the whole thing on the logistical platform. Yes, we're operating in material bodies in the material world. Logistics have something to do with it. But it's not the ultimate thing. That is the point. Bhakti is beyond everything. It's beyond logistics. It's beyond practicalities. I'll give you an example that what comes to my mind. There were hundreds of devotees waiting outside Prabhupada's door in Los Angeles as he came down the stairs from his quarters to get into the car to be driven to where he would do his morning walk. So there are hundreds of devotees around. And everyone is waiting in awe and reverence. And then this particular devotee, who's no longer physically present in this world, Jayo Das, everyone is just mesmerized watching Prabhupada, or just saying, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, as he would get into his car and the servant would put his hand over the top ledge of the car so Prabhupada wouldn't hit his head as he went to sit in the car. And all of a sudden, Jayo just calls out, Prabhupada! The loud, deep voice. Prabhupada! The only oasis in the desert! And Prabhupada just stops, looks at him and says, "Thank you very much." So that's what I mean. He was desperate. He seized the time, you know. So. I remember another story like that. Again, the whole scene in Los Angeles, hundreds of devotees around, and Prabhupada is walking. This is actually in Denver. Prabhupada was going to the car, and amidst hundreds of devotees, my godbrother Swavas Prabhu was there. He wasn't a temple president. He was a book distributor. And he just, you know, again, everyone is just mesmerized by the solemnness and beauty of the scene, and all the devotees are just, and all of a sudden, Savastru, he told me this, he just blurted out, "Prabhupada, I distributed 30 Bhagavad Gitas today and 20 Srimad Bhagavatam." He just blurted out like spontaneously with enthusiasm. And Prabhupada just stopped. "That is a real devotee." Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, well, that means all you have to do is recite your scores. And then automatically you're a real devotee. No, Prabhupada picked up on his bhakti, his genuineness in making that statement. "Prabhupada, I'm trying to please you," in other words. "I worked hard to please you." It was like a child calling for father. So therefore, Prabhupada responded. Otherwise, I saw so many times when devotees would say things like that or give "Prabhupada, you're this, Prabhupada, you're that." And he wouldn't say anything. But according to the bhakti in the heart. So when Savas Prabhu said that, Prabhupada just immediately stopped. "That is a real devotee." So how does material analysis, how does it do justice to all these little situations? No, there's something in the heart. That is the important thing. So therefore, with our heart, if we cry out, "I must be lazy, I must be complacent, how can I serve you?" That is a necessary ingredient of bhakti. It'll trigger something. You don't have to disrupt the guru's routine or how he's doing his service. You don't have to, you know, he's trying to walk somewhere and you do a dandavats across his path. "How can I serve you? I'm complacent, I'm lazy." No. You can just pay your obeisances in an inobtrusive way and just, "Please, how can I serve you?" And then let him respond as he likes. That's what Gauravinoda Maharaj was stressing, that attitude. The attitude of a beggar. "And the fault is mine. Because I'm lazy, because I'm complacent, therefore, nevertheless, I'm begging." Well, that is bhakti. So, I've been thinking about that statement, Maharaj's analysis, for a long time, because it was not the ordinary answer. And yes, it's also true that the spiritual master has a system for caring for devotees, and we should honor and take advantage of that system. That's also true. At the same time, in your heart, you can long for receiving some instruction how you can serve. And just consider, I didn't get that instruction, therefore, it's because I'm lazy. Not because there's something wrong with the system. Gurudev's got too many disciples or something. I'm lazy. I remember Prabhupada coming into my office. Since you got me telling all these stories, and as you say, Balaram is the original spiritual master. So the Guru Tattvas coming from Balaram Nityananda Prabhu. So he was surrounded by the big leaders at the time, and he came into my little office. And so I had read in Second Canto Bhagavatam. My service was the BBT, was, you know, working on Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita all day. So I would read that your vision in approaching a saintly person begins at the feet, just like you look at the deity, and first the feet and then raise your vision. So I was just looking at Prabhupada's feet. And then I raised my vision. And I was a bit surprised by what he saw. He was just looking around in my office. And, but I never saw such a vision like that. He was just noting everything in relation to Krishna's service. And he was commenting to his associates, "This office used to be a kitchen." So you might think, well, why would he say such a thing? You expect him to say, you know, who knows? He's supposed to say something about Radha Krishna Leela? No, he just, "This office used to be a kitchen." But I could see that he's seeing the energy perfectly in relation to Krishna, and he's seeing Krishna, the master of the energy. So while he was doing that, I was wondering. In my heart, I was begging, "Prabhupada, I am a very fallen person. Please, how can I serve you?" And then all of a sudden, one of his entourage spoke out, Devamrita, tell him the service you're doing." So I explained to Prabhupada, "This is what I'm doing at the BBT. I'm going over all your manuscripts to make sure that all your manuscripts are properly dealt with in the production process." And I gave him a long explanation. Then he gave me, the head shake. I thought, well, that's it. Then he just looked at me from head to toe and, the only sound Prabhupada ever said to me, That was it for a lifetime. So what if that was the only sound you ever heard from your guru? What would you do? Really, that was the only sound I ever heard personally in during Prabhupada's physical presence. That's the only sound he ever said to me. That's it. So what would you do? Organize a political demonstration or something? What is this? I've given my life and all I get is one sound all my life? Is this bhakti? So the real action is the vani. That is the real intimacy. So yes, it's appropriate for us to discuss these questions because Nityananda Prabhu, he's original spiritual master. He's the master of the Guru Tattva. Nityananda Prabhu can also administer justice because he shares the mission of Krishna, which is to support the devotees and chastise the miscreants. So we'll hear about that tonight. Nityananda Prabhu administering justice to offenders in his own avaduta way. He causes havoc. Any other questions?
Chief of the Sankirtan movement, is Shakti, yes? Which you touch upon nicely, but...
Oh, maybe we have to get you to say that.
I really meditate on Lord Nityananda in that form, you know, the most powerful preacher and savior.
All right. All right. Yes. Okay. Tonight.
Okay.
Yes.
Maharaj, you were mentioning how Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is exhibiting a whole spectrum of spiritual emotions.
Yes.
Which is very attractive for us also. but the question comes up oftentimes that you use the language that he was exhibiting the spectrum of spiritual emotions in perfection. Mm. And such emotions, of course, draws the souls closer to Krishna. But in conditioned life, our spectrum of emotional experiences tend to create doubt, create animosity amongst devotees, or draw us away from Krishna. Our emotional experiences become quite intense. Sometimes we're in an ashram, and our emotional experience makes us doubt if this is a proper ashram, or if I'm in the right sangha of devotees, and so on. So then sometimes as we're trying to progress spiritually, the tendency is to maybe devalue or not consider those emotions because they're drawing us away from Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So I was wanting to understand, how do we deal with the conditioned emotional experiences which do have a tendency to draw us away from Krishna? How do we deal with that in such a way that it helps us to draw us closer to Krishna?
This is why we need the association of devotees. In the association of sincere devotees, we learn how to be proper persons. A person means emotional expression. On your own, you can't do that. But in the association of devotees, you learn humility. You learn how to have proper pride. You learn how to desire very intensely how to serve Krishna. You learn to be greedy for Krishna's service. All these things are learned in the association of sincere devotees. You know, in thinking about Prabhupada's instruction, that we all work together in his society, I've realized over the years that this is the most purifying situation anyone could ever dream of. You have to do two things at once. You've got to be cooperative. At the same time, you have individual drive and individual exertion. Now, how to balance those two things? It can seem difficult sometimes, but just focusing on it is so purifying. It's so easy, right? If it could just be one thing or the other. Okay, I'll just cooperate, and I won't worry about having my own momentum, my own incentive. No, I'll just be passive. I'm cooperating. Just tell me what to do. You didn't tell me what to do, so I'm not doing anything. I'm cooperating. And then there's the other extreme. It's all about me and my service. Lord Chaitanya said, spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. I'm taking that order as an individual, and I'm just going to do what I've got to do. I don't care what anyone else has to say. I'm not going to let anyone get in the way. It's just all about me and my service. So, those are the two extremes. But we have to balance both of those realities, the cooperative reality and the individual incentive, enterprising spirit. And that's not easy. And we can spend many years just trying to get that blend right. It's very purifying just focusing on that dilemma. But why are we focusing on it? Because it's the desire of Krishna's representative. And it's so purifying. It's easy to go one way or the other. But to do both, how to be individualistic and cooperative at the same time, it's nerve-wracking sometimes. How do you know, as a bhakti yogi, how do you know as a devotee when to assert yourself and when to just kind of, you know, be part of the group of devotees? How do you know? That's why we have to become pure devotees. And Krishna in the heart will tell us. That's the ultimate resolution, which we can't avoid. That's the outcome. So I can't think of a more purifying situation than what Srila Prabhupada gave us in terms of working together in an international society And gradually you find out that most devotees don't think like you. Most devotees don't do things the way you do them, but still you have to work together. Sometimes you think, wouldn't it be so easy just to say, forget all you Prabhus, I'm serving my way, just me. I'll have my own math and everything will be fine. But no, this situation is the most intensely purifying. Every day you have to deal as a reality with being an individual that takes the initiative in Krishna's service, that's responsible for engaging in Krishna's service and pushing on Krishna's mission, yet at the same time being harmonious and cooperative. It's mind-boggling sometimes. But that meditation on this is so purifying. And gradually you become thankful for it. So those emotions that come out of you in striving for that goal of balancing individuality and collegiality, cooperation, cooperativeness, those emotions gradually become more and more purified. This is action in Krishna consciousness. So gradually you begin to appreciate those devotees in the ashram. But you need them to increase the taste of hearing and chanting. You need them to be like mirrors to you so you can see yourself in those mirrors. So gradually, if you give yourself time, you realize that the devotees aren't just obstacles to get around. They're not, you know, pains in the neck. They are essential. And you're so thankful for their presence. And you say, the only reason why I have a problem sometimes with the devotees is because of me. If I were more Krishna conscious, I would be able to handle the situation better. So the solution is, let me become more Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see, why sometimes, all the time, you'll see devotees who, they just seem so naturally able to treat properly other devotees and thrive in their association. So you know what I do in those situations? I just pray to the super soul in the heart. You see that devotee? That's what I want to be like. I don't care if it takes 10 births. I don't put any time limit, but that's the direction I want to go. And the super soul in your heart, he notices. He's Upadrasta and Anumanta, witness, permitter. And of course, the super soul in the heart just relishes intensely when the devotee thinks like that. And it is because of the guidance of the super soul in the heart that you can attain that goal, although it seems so impossible. So in the association of devotees, we should not fear humiliation in that you're always around someone who's doing something better. This is the glory of Prabhupada society. At any moment, whatever service you're doing, at any moment, you can be sure someone in the wide international world of ISKCON is doing the service better. Now, isn't that humiliating? You may be leading kirtan, you may be speaking, you may be managing, you may be doing your university outreach, whatever. You can be sure that somewhere in the wide world of ISKCON, it could be in Siberia, it could be South America, someone, at least one person, is doing the service exactly at that same moment better than you. Now that is what I call humiliating. You may be doing Gopinath Prasad Prabhu's the service, yeah, what is it? SEO, what is it? Search engine optimization. But somewhere in the wide world of ISKCON, we don't know, but I have seen, it's always like this. Someone is doing it better. Some technician devotee above the Arctic Circle in Russia or something. Got it all figured out. That's the glory of being in the society of devotees. So whenever you think you've had a great moment in Krishna's service, well, that was really good what I did. I'm really feeling blissful about what I did. Just remember, at this very moment, someone's doing the same service better. That is fact. And better means that it may not be better from the material point of view, but Krishna likes it better. That's the advantage of leaving yourself open to the association of devotees. Leaving yourself open to the association of devotees means you're open to the reality that they're doing better than me. This is the opposite of what you're taught in the mundane world. In the mundane world, you're taught, sell yourself. Devotees who are working in the corporate world, they tell me these days what the lingo is. It's not that just there's a brand of clothes or a brand of car or a brand of cosmetics. In the corporate world, you are your own brand, and you always have to watch how your brand is being perceived. You as an individual corporate worker, you're a brand. So be conscious of your brand's worth, its integrity, its perceptions. So always advance your brand. You always be enhancing your brand, you. Let your brand be perceived as productive, as efficient, as creative. Always polish your own mirror. But bhakti isn't like that. To thrive in the association of devotees, you leave yourself open to the reality that these prabhus, they're doing so much better than me. But that doesn't mean I won't do anything. Oh, they're all better than me, so. No, you try harder. And therefore, you pray to Krishna. I don't care how many bursts it takes. I see the goal, that's where I'm going. And then the super soul in your heart does his inconceivable arrangements. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I must serve Krishna, whether he accepts it or not. So wait a minute. I'm serving him, he accepts. It's automatic. No, I must serve Krishna, whether he accepts or not. That's up to him, but I must serve Krishna. Sounds very severe, doesn't it? I was reading the letters Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote to the first disciples who went to London. And he wrote them a very encouraging letter. I don't know how you'd have responded if you were doing your service and the guru wrote you a letter saying, don't expect to see any result for your service for hundreds of years. That's what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote the first devotees who went to London. Again, that same attitude. I must serve Krishna. Whether he accepts it or not, I'm going on with my service to him. Mahaprabhu, you recite every morning. You may handle me roughly by your embrace, make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. Doesn't matter. You're my worshipful Lord unconditionally. It's the same mindset. I must serve Krishna whether he accepts or not. In other words, we shouldn't think it's automatic that Krishna has to accept what I do. But I still must serve Krishna. When he wants to accept, that's up to him. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, you were mentioning in the class that sometimes devotees hold on to their material attachments, fearing that they just don't want to have that leap of faith. They don't want to just, it's too soon to be like pure devotee or something. Mm. So Maharaj, I mean, but similarly, like when you were explaining this answer of Gaur Govind Maharaj, you were saying many devotees do speak about be practical, go slow, slow and steady wins the race. You know, just don't be like too much enthusiastically in starting and then you'll end up. So like, how do we...
Okay, but that statement I was quoting from Maharaj didn't mean that you should be impatient or hectic or get hysterical. He was just saying that in a mature, composed way, you understand I'm lazy, I'm complacent, therefore I'm feeling like I haven't gotten that direct service instruction yet. It's on me. So he didn't say that you just flip out and just, you know, become a total nervous wreck because of it. But still, he was saying, you take the initiative. So how you take that initiative? Well, you have to pray to Krishna. What are the circumstances in which you can express that heart's conviction that I haven't gotten any specific service instruction, personal service instruction, because I'm lazy and complacent? Now, I think normally, you know, you wouldn't think that, would you? Well, it's the system. It's just, you know, so many God brothers, you know, what can be done, you know. No, that is, that mentality is actually disempowering. So what I could see, the answer Maharaj was giving was empowering. It's on me. Never mind the circumstances. If I have that right attitude, something will happen. So this is how to be properly proactive in bhakti. It doesn't mean that you act rashly or you lose your patience. No, you proceed soberly and calmly with this attitude. Confident that with this attitude, one day something will happen. And it will. And then you'll never forget that. And you'll be able to help others when they come to you with the same... And one day in the future, all of you will be giving guidance to others who will think the same thing about you. We can't connect with you as much as we want. No time. You don't have enough time for us. As counselors, you get an advanced opportunity for dealing with all that. Today's students become tomorrow's teachers. That's parampara. So just wait. You'll get your opportunity. So we've had a very interesting discussion of Guru Tattva, and indeed, as we said, Nityananda Prabhu is the original spiritual master. Technical detail, for those of you who relish spiritual technical details, devotee can either trace the Guru Tattva back to Nityananda Prabhu or Srimati Radharani. Don't ask me anything more than that. But I know in every audience there's those who relish the transcendental technical details, you know. So tonight we'll try to speak more about Nityananda Prabhu. In your association, it's all possible. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.